We begin the current daf v'sech, the siyum daf ayin beis. We begin on the bottom line of ayin al from a beis, where the Gemara continues the discussion of the braisa from the previous daf. And that is our Mishnah concluded the discussion of the Seder of the Kohen Gadol Yom Kippurim, which we went through the five different phases. Then the previous daf spoke about the different garments that were worn by the Kohen Hedjit, which were four garments, and the Kohen Gadol, which were eight garments. Then, as a way of introduction, our Gemara brought a braisa that defined different terms of different garments and different things that are in the Beis HaMikdash regarding what is it that they're made out of. So it says in the Torah what type of fabrics they're made out of. Tcheles, argaman, telashani. However, how were the threads? So that the Braisa brought these different terms. For example, the term sheish means that they're sixfold, each thread. Each thread is made out of six of each type of that there are over there. So for example, if there's tcheles, there's six of tcheles, argaman, six, and then they're all twined together and made into one thread. So our Gemara is in the middle of discussing the different terms of the Braisa, which we spoke about previously. The Sheish means six, Mazhar means eight. Now our Gemara continues quoting from the Braisa. The Braisa said, Me'il is Shnei Maser. The Me'il, the robe that was worn by the Kohen Gadol, that was made out of 12-fold each thread. So that the Gemara is Menalan, as it asked by the previous terms, how we know that that's what it means. How do we know that the Me'il, each thread, was 12-fold? So the Gemara said, Dachsilik says a pasuk in Shemais. It says, you should make the robe of the ephod, and that's because there was the relationship between the ephod, which was this apron-like thing, which was over the me'il. So you should make the robe of the ephod. The Gemara continues top of Ayin, Beis, and Aleph. The pasuk says, t'chil t'chilis. Now, what does t'chil mean? So Rashi defines, and this is what the Gemara is defining t'chil as, which generally would mean as totally t'chilis. However, Rashi says that the word t'chil means godil, means braided. Now, the assumption the Gemara is going with is that one cannot braid something with less than two threads, and that's obvious because you have to braid them. So therefore, the Gemara makes the following drasha. The yalef tcheles tcheles mipureches. Now, it says over here by the me'il that it's made out of this blue wool, and it says tcheles also by the pureches, by the curtain, which we spoke about on the previous stuff. Now, malahal and shisha, just like over there by the pureches, where each type of fabric is made out of sixfold, and that's how you get 24, because since there's four types, so you do 6 times 4 is 24. Afkan shisha, here also when it references tcheles by the me'il, must mean that tcheles is sixfold. However, 6 is not the total, because that means each one was 6. But since it had the me'il had to be braided, that means it had to be times 2. And hence, that's how you get 12 for each one of the me'il, because since you had to braid each thread, so hence it was the 6 of what tcheles is supposed to be, as we learned from the pareches. And since you had to braid it to make the thread, so that was 6 times 2, which the minimum of braiding is 2 threads, that's why each thread was 12-fold. Now, the Gemara asks, instead of learning the me'il from the pareches, b'nelef mishulav v'rimaynav, let us learn, which it doesn't say clearly in the Torah regarding the me'il, how many folds are each thread, learn it from its hem and the pomegranates that hang from the bottom of the me'il. As we spoke about in the previous daf, malahal and shemayna, just like over there where it says the term mazha, which we learned from Avnet, that just like over there it's going to be 8 because of the total of 24, which will then divide it by 3 that there are for the pomegranates that has 3 different types of tcheles and argaman tlashani, so each one will be 8. So afkan shemayna, maybe here also, the me'il should learn from the other parts of it, which are the ornaments hanging from the bottom, the shulav and the which are the pomegranates that are hanging, that each thread was eightfold. Maybe we should learn from over there instead of learning from somewhere else because of tcheles, tcheles. Rather, we should learn that it's eightfold, not 12. Now the Gemara answer is no, because done and kli mikli. We learn a vessel from a vessel, and that is the me'il is a vessel, it's a garment, which we always call that a kli, and the pareches is a vessel, it's also a curtain. However, ain't done kli mitachshi kli. We don't learn a vessel, in other words, a reference to the me'il, from an ornament of a vessel. And that's because the pomegranates were the ornaments of the me'il. So therefore, we'd rather learn from the pareches, which was a kli, to a kli, than from its own me'il, but it's going to be an ornament, not a kli itself. However, the Gemara retorts and says, Adrabba, what do you mean? To the contrary, we should learn from the remaining of the me'il, because dan and gufa mi gufi, let us learn from the object of the me'il, from the object of the me'il itself, which are the ornaments hanging from it, which is the bottom, and that's the remainim, v'ein dana gufa mi'alma, and we shouldn't learn the object of the meal itself from something, from some other object, specifically the pareches. Now the Gemara answer is no. Haina darmina, this is what we said on the previous stuff, which when the Gemara was clarifying the five different terms that are mentioned, sheish, in the Torah, which when it's talking about the objects in the pasuk over there, it only had to say one sheish at the end. Why does it say five times? So he said that each term was saying something else. One is to define that it has to be made out of linen. One that it has to be sixfold. One that it has to be twined. It had all these different terms. And one of them was saying, l'shar begadim shalei nema ben sheish. There was an extra term of sheish to say that even the other garments, that it doesn't say regarding them this term of sheish, that they should also be sixfold. Now, we alluded to that on the previous daf. Which one is that one? That's what the Gemara is clarifying over that. Which object doesn't say in the base of Middash that it should be sheish, but it is included in sheish from the extra term of that pasuk that was mentioned on the previous daf? That is a reference to the Me'il. And therefore, we know that the Me'il, which is only Tcheles, only one type of fabric, which is the Tcheles, that it should be six, because sheish over there references to Me'il too. Now, however, since we said that it has to be klil, which means to say that it has to be braided, so you take six times two, because that's the minimum amount if you want to braid, it has to be two different things that you're braiding together, and therefore that's how we know that me'il is each thread is 12-fold. Now the Gemara continues explaining the braisa. So the braisa went on and said that pereches, the curtain that's in the base of Midrash, are ester marba. They're 24-fold each thread. And that the Gemara explains, because you have dalid, the shita, you have four different types that are made out of the pareches, the four different fabrics, which each one is six, because it says over there by the pareches the term of sheish, which we said on the previous daf, that whenever it says sheish, it means to say that it's the thread should be sixfold. And therefore, like dina v'like dina, you don't need a judge, you don't need judgment. What that means to say is there's no doubt at all regarding the pareches, although we had a lengthy discussion regarding the other items, how do we know, and that's what it means, that it's this amount fold and this amount fold. Here it's pretty straightforward that we know that the parech is going to be 24-fold because sheish means six times, and there's four types, six times four is 24. Now the Braisa continued and said that cheshen ve'efod, the breastplate of the Kohen Gadol, and the efod, the apron-like thing that it goes, that's with the cheshen, that's going to be esrim b'shmein, that's going to be 28 threads. So the Gemara asked Manola, and how do we know that they're 28-fold each thread? The Sifrei says the pasuk in Shemais. It says Vasisa Cheshen Mish, but you should make a Cheshen, a breastplate of judgment of justice. Maisa Cheshiv, the work of a craftsman. Kemaisa Eifoy Tesano, you should make it like the work of the Eifoy, of that apron-like robe. That was Zahav, made out of gold. Tcheles is blue wool, Vargamon and purple wool. Vitalash Shani, and this red wool. Vesheish Mazar, and twined linen. Now, the Gemara explains. You have Arba, the Shita Shita. You have the four types that are six each, which makes it Esrim Arba, that's 24. Then you have Zav Arba, you have the gold, that's four each. Ha'esrim V'tamanya, so you have 28, and that's how we know that each thread is really composed of 28 individual threads, because you have the four types that are mentioned in the Pasuk, Tcheles, Argam, Tlashani, and Sheish. Each one of those are going to be sixfold, that's 24, plus an extra four of the Zav, which is unique for the Maisa Cheshav and the Eifah, that's going to make for a total of 28. That the Gemara asks, Ve'imazov namashisha. Why are you saying that the gold is different than the rest? Those four, you're saying that they're each six apiece. That's 24. Why don't you say that the gold itself is also going to be six apiece, and therefore you're going to have a total of 30, not 28? And that the Gemara says, Amra Rav Acha Bar Yaakov. He says, Amakra, the pasuk says in Shemais. And this is a pasuk in Shemais Lamates Gimel that starts off when it talks about the gold that's also put into the into the cheshen and the ephod, it says vayiraku es pachi hazav, that they will flatten out the plates of gold, and then the pasuk continues and says vekitzeitz pasilim, they'll cut the strands, and that is because you have to, gold is not generally something that's woven, so you have to first make it flat into a plate, and then you cut the strands. Now, the drasha is, it didn't say psil, which would have sounded like it's one strand, rather it said pasilim, which is two strands. Now, therefore, it says if you're going to take that, which you're going to be kitzitz, you're going to cut the strands, which are two, so you can end up harikandalit, that makes four strands. That's how we know there's four strands of the gold, which is put together with the other four. Hence, you have 24 plus another four of the gold, which makes 28. That's one pshat in the Gemara, how we know that the zav was only four, not six, because it says v'kitzitz psilim, you're cutting the two strands into two, hence you're getting four. Another pshat the Gemara brings in Rav Ashi Amar. He says the reason why you couldn't say that the gold was also sixfold like the other ones is because Amakra, the pasuk there says in the second half of that pasuk, says that they would cut the strands Lasois betoich atcheles, so that they could have the gold within the blue wool, ubetoich argomen, and within the purple wool, which is mashma, that in each type of the tcheles and the argomen, each one had inside of that one strand of gold. Now, the Gemara asks, heichenavet. It doesn't say how many strands of gold there are, but it says that the gold has in each one, and then you mix all those four types together and make this one big thread. Now, the Gemara asks, heichenavet, how are we going to do this to get the gold inside these four different types that the Pasuk says? If you're going to say, Navid Arba, that you're going to make the four different types, the tray with two strands of gold in each one of the four types, Havlo Tamanya. But that will make a total of eight strands of gold. And we're not saying that. We're saying that it should be six. There's no reason to say that there's going to be eight strands of gold. Now, Navid Trey, if you're going to say that two of the types we should make, the tray should have two a piece of gold, Betray, and the other two will have the chad, will have one apiece, and that way you'll have six strands of gold, because that's what we were asking. We were saying, how do you know there's four that to make a total of 28? Maybe it should be six, like all the other types had six apiece. Now, how are you going to have a total of six gold strands? If you're going to two apiece, it's going to be eight. If you're going to do two of them two and two of them one, which that will make six, however, that the Gemara says, Vasisa. The Torah says regarding the Vaidis of making the big day kahuna, it says that you should make them, which we had said a drush in the previous daf, shiyu kol asiyosef shavus, that all its making should be equal, and hence you can't have in some of them two strands of gold and some of them one, because they have to have that uniformity the same by each one. And that's how we know that it must be, there's the second part of the Gemara saying, only four strands of gold, because it can't have six, because realistically you would have to break it up, two and two, to have two of them two apiece and two of them one apiece, and that can't be, it has to be uniform. And that's how we know that each one had one strand of gold, and that's how we know there was four, and that's why there was a total of, for the Cheshon Eifet, each strand, each thread was really 28 fold of the four different types, and the gold having one in each one. Nothing more continues on this topic that we're discussing of what the Mishnah had introduced in the previous daf of Big Tikkun of the kind of garments. Sama Rachav Amar of Yehuda, says Hamakireya Bigda Kuhuna. If someone tears the Kana garments, Loika, he gets lashes. Shnelik says a pasuk in Shemois, Loikareya. You're not allowed to tear it, and hence for a lav in the Torah you get Malkus. Now Maskalavaracha by Yaakov, he asks, how do you know that? Vidimahachikam Rachman, maybe this is what the Torah is saying. Navid le safa, make a hem for the Kahana garments, kiheicha delay nikr, so that they do not tear. It's not saying that you shouldn't tear it, that's a prohibition. It's saying, make the garments, lo yikirei, that they shouldn't tear, but not that that's forbidden. It's just that we want to avoid that happening. And that the Gemara answers, meek sivich lo yikirei. Does the pasuk say, so that they do not tear? It doesn't say that. It says, lo yikirei, you shouldn't tear it. And that's how we know that it's a prohibition and not telling you a precautionary measure in how you should make the garments. Similarly, the Gemara brings that, Amar Rebbe Lazar said, Hamaziach choshen me'ala eifet. If whoever removes the breastplate from the apron-like garment, which is called the apron, or v'hameser bad the aron, if someone removes the poles of the aron hakodesh from the rings that hold in the poles, for either one of them, like he gets lashes. Shem, like it says a pasuk in Shemais, one pasuk says lo yizach, you're not allowed to remove the cheshin from the apron, and the other pasuk says lo yisur, you're not allowed to remove the poles from the rings that hold it in by the aron. That's how you know you get lashes, because the negative prohibition in the Torah. However, Maskabla Rav Acha Yaakov, he asked, same as we asked before, V'dimeki kam rachmana, maybe when the Torah was saying this lo yizach lo yisura, it meant to say chadkinu, tie it tight on the rings, v'avdinu shaper, and do it very well, in other words, regarding to the badim, the poles, put it into the rings very tight, kadesh lo yizach lo yisura, that it should not fall off the cheshen from the ephod, or to have the poles being removed. They both have rings. It's saying tie them very tight so that it shouldn't happen. But it's not saying that you shouldn't do it, that it's a negative prohibition to get lashes. It's just saying what we should avoid, and therefore make it in a way that it won't happen. That the Gemara says, Mik siv shaloy yizach v'shaloy yisur, is it saying in the passive way, that so that it should not fall off the cheshen from the ephod, or that the pole should not be removed, that it shouldn't happen, therefore you should make it tight? That's not what it's saying. It doesn't say that. It's saying, don't do this, and don't do that, and that's how we know it's a negative prohibition that you get malchus for that. Now the Gemara continues on this topic of the badi aron, of the poles of the aron HaKadosh. So Rabbi Yisrael Reb Chanina Rami, he posed the following contradiction. On the one hand, Ksiv, there's a pasuk in Shemais that says, B'tabois ha'aron yu habadim, that in the rings of the aron, of the ark, should be the poles. And it says, lo yisur, it should not be removed from those rings. So you see that it can't be removed, it has to stay there. Yet v'chsev, it says in the pasuk right before that, it says v'huve es bada b'tabois, that its poles should be placed within the rings. It should be brought in there. Now, that sounds like that they come and go. It should be brought in there, but it sounds like it could be taken off, that it's not tight, that it never removed from where it is. So how do we resolve that? That the Gemara says, misparkin, they are loose, they could be moved, but however, they cannot be totally removed. And that is because the edges of the poles were very thick. And therefore, you have to first push it and get it inside, pushing it very tight into the rings. And once you got it in, however, the middle part of the poles were very thin. And therefore, although it was loose and it was able to come back and forth, however, it wasn't able to be totally removed, and that was the purpose of why the edges were made thick, to make sure that it shouldn't be removed totally, but yes, it could be loose and it's moved back and forth, but not totally, and that's how, that was lo yisuru, versus vehuva is to say that within the middle parts that can be moved back and forth. So the Gemara says, Tanyam Hoch, is similar in the Braisa that resolves it this way. The Braisa quotes the pasuk "B'tabois ha'aron yihyu habadim," that in the rings of the aron should be the poles, and then it goes on to say "lo yisur," it should not be removed. Now, so the Braisa says "yachal yuzur mekayman." From that pasuk, I would think to say it cannot be removed from its place; it has to stay exactly where it is. "Lo yisur tamalem." That's what the other pasuk teaches. "B'huves bade b'tabois," that its poles should be brought into the rings, which sounds like that it could be brought back and forth. Now, "v'ivu huve esbade," but if I only had that pasuk of that it could be brought back and forth, and you would think to say you could take it in and take it out, that doesn't have to stay in the rings. Tamalema, that's what the first pasuk teaches, b'tabos aron yihyu habadim, that in the rings of the aron should be the poles. So how do we resolve that? Could it be moved back and forth, or does it have to stay where it is? Another braisa says, misparkin ve'ein nishmatan. It's loose, it could be moved, however, it cannot be removed, and that's the resolution of the two different psukim. Now the Gemara continues with other psukim regarding the objects in the Mishkan. So Amir Rab Chama Bar Pchanina, he says, Maidich Siv, what does this mean, the Pasuk in Shemais, where it says in the Pasuk in Perichavav, Pasuk Tazvav, it says, Vasisa Asakrashim LaMishkan, you should make the planks for the Mishkan, which is what the structure of the Mishkan was made out of, from Atze Shitim, from Cedarwood Oimdim, that's standing. What does the term Oimdim mean? So the Gemara gives three interpretations. Either Sha'imdim Derech Gedilasim, that they would be standing, these are the planks that made the walls of the Mishkan, the way that they grew, which means to say the upper part of the tree was on the top and the lower part of the tree was on the bottom. Tav'achar, second pshat the Gemara brings is oimdim, they were standing, which means to say shemamidim, it's from the term of supporting, shemamidim es tipuin, that they supported their plates. And that is because the krushim were plated gold and it supported it by being nailed in, or another interpretation Rashi says that the wood, the atzeshitim, did not get wormy, and hence then the plating would just fall off because it wouldn't have the support of the wood underneath it. So it's saying it was atzeshitim, that was oimdim, it supported its plating. A third interpretation the Gemara brings, davachar, oimdim, what does it mean that they were standing? Because Shem Atoimim, maybe you're going to say, from the time that the Beis HaMikdash was buried, that it was concealed, maybe of its Sivron, maybe the logic that we were thinking that it's going to come back at one point, that we lost our hope that it's not going to come back. And similarly, Batal Sichuyin, that it's this that we're looking towards. Sichuy is a term of looking, which is what the term Tzipiyah also comes of, Tzaifa, that our hope and what we're looking for has been gone already because, look, the Mishkan's not around anymore. Tamalayim ha'imdim, that's what the Pasuk teaches you, that it's standing, sha'imdim lo'oylam o'loylamim, that the Mishkan, the Beis HaMikdash, stands forever and ever, and although it's not around anymore, it's still around, and we shouldn't lose our hope. Now the Gemara continues with another interpretation from the same Amora. Amar Reb Chama Bar Pchanina, he says, Maidich said, what does this mean, the Pasuk in Shemais that says, as bigdei hasrad, that the begadim of srad were lesharis b'kodesh, which were to serve in the holy areas. Now, this is talking about the different begadim that were there in the Beis HaMikdash. What does the term srad mean? So now, as Rashi says, the term srad comes in the term of sarid, which means remnant. So what does that mean? Why is the bigdei kohuna being called that? So Gemara continues in Amud Beis, it means to say that ilmalei bigdei kohuna, if not for the kahana garments, which through those garments allows the kahana to go ahead and bring the karbanos, which provide atonement for the Jewish people, lo yinishtar misoyneim shel Yisrael, sarid apalit, there would not be a remnant, it wouldn't be around anymore, Now, although it says the enemies of the Jewish people, it says it in a way of what's called Sagi Nahar, because we don't want to curse the Jewish people. So we use the enemies, but we really mean a reference to the Jewish people. There would not have been a remnant of the Jewish people, a Sarid or Palad, any leftovers and any survivors. And that's why it's calling them Bigdei Srad, that because of the Bigdei Kuna, there is a Srad, there's a remnant to the Jewish people. That's one pshat. Another interpretation that Gemara brings in Shmuel ben Nachmeni Amar, Dvei Rav Shimon Tana, or some have the Girsa Dvei Rav Shmuel Tana that was taught in the yeshiva of Rav Shmuel, that it means Begadim Shegerdin Oysan Kibriyasa Mikleihein. It means the garments that were cut as they were created, as they were formed from their vessel, from the loom that it was made on. As Rashi explains, they would cut them in the way that they're cut from the loom, the way that they were formed. And what that means is that they were ready-made, so to speak, after the process of weaving it, which was, means to say that you could put it on straight after that. And not as normally as vessels are, as garments are usually made, that after that they're woven, then they have to go ahead and be attached one to another with needlework. That's what he's saying, that generally these garments were totally made, ready to wear right at when they were woven. However, umisardin mehem klum, there was a little bit that was left over that was then later attached one to the other that wasn't woven with them. And that's what it means, Bigdei Srad, there were these garments that were left over that weren't ready-made straight off the loom. Now the Gemara asks, mahi, what was that remnant that did need to be put together? Rish Lakish Amar, he says, elu maisei machat, these are the acts of the needlework, of sewing. That means to say there was part of what was woven on its own, not on the loom ready-made to put on. And then it was attached with needlework. That was what we're calling Bigdei Srad, because there was some remnant that was not ready-made straight off the loom. And although generally you cannot wear something right off the loom, you have to then put it together and create a garment. The Kahana garments were ready, except for a Srad. There was a little bit of leftover that needed some needlework to put it together. However, Meisvei, the Gemara asked Braisa on Rish Lakish that there was needlework done for the kind of garments, although very little, which generally was made ready from the when it was woven. However, he said there was part of it that needed Maisa Machat. On that, the Gemara asked, we learned in the Braisa that says, Bigdei Kahuna ein oisin oisan Maisa Machat. We do not make the kind of garments made out of needlework that it should be sewn. Ela Maisa Oreg, rather, it's a work of a weaving. Shneimak, it says the pasuk in Shemayis, Maisa Eirik, that it was weaving that it was made. So how could Rish Lakish say that, what does it mean, Bigdei Srad, which means say there was a remnant that wasn't ready worn straight off the loom where it was woven, rather that it had to be sewn together with, through needlework, when we see clearly that the Braisa says that they were not woven, that they were not sewn. So Abaye says, Loi Nitzucha, when Rish Lakish said that it was sewn, Maisa Machat, which although the Braisa says not, that was El Beis Yachalem. That was for the sleeves of the Kahana garments. Ketanah, we learned the Braisa, that Beis Yachal, Bigdei Kuna, the sleeves of the garments of the Kahanim, Ne'eregis Befnei Atzma. That was woven by itself. Like we said, there was Srad, there was something that was left over, that was not woven with the rest on the loom. Venedbekis Imabegid, and then it was attached to the rest of the garment. How was that done? That was through, like Rish Lakish said, Maisa Machat, through needlework. Umagas at Pisayad, and then the sleeve would reach all the way to the palm of the Kayan's hand. So therefore the Gemara resolves that although you're right, it says in the Pasuk that they have to be woven, not needlework, that does not mean regarding when you're attaching. You're right, all of it was woven, including the sleeve. However, they were allowed to be attached by sewing, which that was the case by the sleeves, that they were made separately, like we said, Srad, where then they was attached through a Maisa Machat. Now the Gemara continues with the same Amari that we mentioned before regarding the different Kalim in the Beis HaMikdash. So this is regarding the Aron HaKodesh. So Amar Rachava Amar Rabbi Yehuda, he says, Sholosh Aronis Asa Betzal. Betzal, who he built the Mishkan in the Midbar, he made three different boxes for the Aron HaKodesh, which it says regarding that it was Mibayis Amichutz Titzapeno. It says that there was the box of the Aron HaKodesh, which was then had a box inside of it, and a box outside of it that was plating it with gold, as the Gemara explains. And Tsoyi Shalates, the middle one was made out of wood. Now, and then he put one golden box inside of it. Then he put that he put the wooden one inside that golden one. And then you put another golden one inside the wooden one. And therefore, it looked like gold from the inside and the outside. And then the upper part was covered with gold. And therefore, the whole thing looked like it was made out of gold because it was plated from gold from inside and the outside. Now, the middle one of wood was Tisha, had a height of 9 tefachim when one is measuring from the outside. As the pasuk says, that it was va'ama v'chetzi kamasai. The height was an am and a half, which are 9 tefachim. Now, there were no legs for the wooden box. It was just a hollow box. Now, that was the height of the middle box, which was made out of wood. Penimi shel zahav, the middle one of gold, as we said, there was 3 boxes, one inside the other, the gold in the inside and the outside, and the middle one was made out of wood. So the middle golden one was shmeina, was 8 tefachim in the height. And the reason is because the wooden one, its bottom, had a thickness of a tefach. Therefore, when you put in the middle box of gold, since it went up only to the height of the wooden one, because it was equal on the top, so it only needed a height of 8 tefachim, because you had the thickness of the wooden one, which was a tefach, that's what made it 9, but that was measuring from the outside. That means the internal area of height was only 8 tefachim, so the box of the golden one was only 8 tefachim high. So therefore, again, it reached the same height as the wooden one. Then chitzain, the outer one of gold, was asara umashu, was 10.5 tefachim high. And the reason for that was is because you had to have the 9 tefachim, which correlated to the 9 tefachim of the wooden inner one. Now, it needed another mashu. It says it was 10.5. So 9, we said, because that was to correlate with the 9 of the wooden one in the middle. Then it needed another little bit for the golden outer one, which had a bottom. So to make up for that discrepancy, because yes, it's having the 9 of the wood, but it also has its bottom, which you have to count towards. That was that mashu, that was that minute amount. Then why did it have to have 10.5? Because it needed another tefach to go up on the top, which was because there was a kapiris, which was the covering of the Aron HaKodesh that was placed on top of the box of the Aron HaKodesh. Now that was a tefach thick, and the outer box, the last golden outer box, had to cover that thickness of the kapiris so that it was like within that, and you didn't see the thickness of the kapiris. It was actually covered by the outer box, so that's why it had to be 10 tefachim and a mashu, and just a little bit. Again, 9 to cover the wooden box, a little bit to get the bottom of the golden box, which took up some space too, and then another tefach to cover the kapiris, which was on the top. And that the Gemara asked, about time learned the braisa was achad osur mashu, that the outer box was not 10 and a little bit, but it was 11 and a little bit. So that the Gemara says, loikash, it's not a difficulty, because the braisa that says it was 11.5 tefachim high, was Kamanda Amar, like the opinion that says, Yesh Ba'avyoy, that there was a thickness on the outer golden box, that its bottom had a thickness of tefach, of a tefach. In other words, just like the wooden one had a thickness of a tefach, so too the outer golden one had its own thickness of a tefach, its bottom. And therefore you had to have 11.5, an added tefach, because not just did you have the 10.5 that we spoke about, but another tefach to make up for the bottom of it, which besides the area of inside that it had to cover the 9 of the wooden one and the extra tefach for the kapiris, it had to have another tefach on the bottom where it started on the outside measuring because its own bottom had a thickness of a tefach. However, Rabbi Yehuda that said it was 10.5 was command amma in babi tefach. He goes like the pin that says that the thickness of the bottom of the outer box was only a mashu, and therefore he says that it only needed 10 in a mashu, 9 for the wooden box, another tefach for the kapiris, and just a mashu, a little bit amount, for the bottom of the golden box. Now, however, the Gemara asks, according to the Braisa, umay mashu. In other words, according to Yehuda, we understand why it was 10 and a little bit. 9 for the wooden box, which I had to cover that wooden so that it's played on the outside, another tefach for the kapiris, and just a little bit for what's on the bottom of the golden box. However, according to the Braisa, why is it 11 and a little bit? We said that how is it to get to 11? You get 9 of the wooden, another one to make 10 for the kapiris, and another tefach for the bottom, the thickness of the gold one, that makes it 11. So why do you need another minute amount? The minute amount for Rebbe Yehuda is for the bottom, but here the bottom itself was a tefach. So why do you need that extra little bit of 11 and a mashu? Now the Gemara answers that mashu was the zer. That was the crown that went up above the top of the kapiris, which was a minute amount. And that's because we need a crown that went around the kapiris that covered the Aron HaKodesh. That's why, according to the Braisa, it had to be 11 and a little bit. Whereas according to Rav Yehuda, he said that little bit amount was for the bottom of the outer box. He obviously, Rashi explains, was not referencing the zer, the crown. With regards to the crown, then it was even more than a 10 and a mashu. It would have to be another mashu, because the crown itself had to also protrude atop the kapiris that was on the top of the aron. But he wasn't talking about that. That's why he called it 10 and a little bit, because he was only referencing the bottom of the golden box. The Braisa says 11 a little bit, was saying that the bottom was a tefach, but you need to have 11 and that little bit for the crown that goes around the top of the kapiris. So now, related to this crown that we just spoke about with the Aron HaKodesh, the Gemara brings the following drasha. Amar Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan says, Shloisha Zerim Hein. There were three crowns that were made with the different vessels in the Beis HaMikdash. Shamazbeach. The Mizbeach, the altar, had a crown which was a simon for the Kester Kahuna, which was for the crown of that the Kahuna had. Vishal Aron, the Aron HaKodesh, as we just spoke about, had a crown. That was a sign for the Kester Tyre, for the crown of Tyre. Shal Shulchan, and the table that was in the Beis HaMikdash, that also had a crown. That was a simon for what's called Kesser Malchus, for the crown of royalty. And that's because the table was a sign for wealth of the kings, because that's where the bread was, that's for sustenance. And therefore, that was the symbolism of these three different crowns that were in the three different vessels that were in the Beis HaMikdash. Now, the Gemara continues and says, Shal Mizbeach Zacha Aron Unatale. The crown of the Mizbeach, Aaron HaKohen merited and he took. And that's because the kahuna was given to Aaron with a bris of melech. That's the crown of kahuna. He took that crown. Shal Shulchan, the crown of the table, Zacha David Natali. That David HaMelech merited to take because the malchus was given to David and his children, as it says in the pasuk, until Yudches. So he took the Keser Malchus. Shal Aaron Adain Munachu. However, the crown of the Aaron, which we said is a reference to Keser Taira, that's still around. And whoever wants to take the crown of Torah could take it for himself. Now, Shema Torah Pacha, so you might think to say, that must be that's a lower crown because the other ones, the best ones, were taken already. And the one that's left over is the one of Torah. That the Gemara says, Tamalema, that's what Pasuk teaches in Mishlei. It says, Bi Malachim Im Loichu. The Torah is saying that Pasuk and saying, through me, kings will be kinged. Now, who's greater? The king or the one who gets to appoint who is the king? When they get to the point, who is the king? And the Torah is saying, I make people, I make things into kings, must be the Torah is the greatest of them all. And that's saying that although the other crowns are taken, whoever wants to take Keser Torah, it's his for the taking. Everyone could become and the one who gets the crown of Torah. Now, related to this of the Zer, of the crown, the Gemara brings the following contradiction. Rabbi Yochanan posed the following question. He said, on the one hand, Ksiv Zar, the way it's written is without a Yud. It's written regarding the crown that's mentioned in the Torah, regarding the Aron HaKodesh. It says Zar, like a foreigner, someone that you don't know. Yet a Kareen on Zer, but the way it's pronounced, the way we read in the Torah, is a crown. How do we understand that? So that the Gemara says, Zacha, if the person merits to learn Torah Lishma for its sake and to fulfill the words of the Torah, so Nasus Leizer, then he's actually reading it, as we said, the way it's reading, he's internalizing it, so then the Torah becomes from a crown. If he doesn't merit, then Zara, the Torah, becomes forgotten, it becomes foreign, Heymana, from him, and that's the resolution of that it's written one way, and however it's read another way, to say that the Torah could go either way. It could either be a Zer or it could be a Zar. Similarly, Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Yochanan posed another contradiction. See if there's a pasuk in the Devarim that says, V'asisa l'cha aron eitz. Hashem told Moshe Beinu, you should make for yourself an aron, which was the ark, made out of wood. Yet there's a pasuk in Shemais that says, "Va'asu aron atzei shittim." They should make, a reference to the Jewish people, an ark made out of atzei shittim. So who should make it? Moshe or the Jewish people? So that Rabbi Yochanan says, "Mikan l'tamu chacham." From here we see that regarding a Talmudic scholar, shebnei ira mitzuvan lasis lemelachta, that the people of his city have to do the work that he has to do, and that's because originally the Aron HaKodesh, its job was placed on Moshe Rabbeinu. And only later was that then placed onto the Jewish people to do. Now, Rashi says, although the Pesukim is not in that order, however, this is really just what's called Nasmach B'Yalma. This is not really where we're learning it out from. We know this halacha. We're just supporting it by how do we resolve these two Pesukim, that although the one of Moshe Rabbeinu actually is written later in the Devarim, however, we're saying that was the idea of these two different Pesukim, that first was given to Moshe, that you should make it, and this, that he's his responsibility. Now, all the Jewish people have to do it because what's incumbent upon the requirements of a Talmud Chacham, the people of a city have to do his needs. Now, continuing on the idea of the Aron and that it symbolizes the Torah, it says regarding the Aron HaKodesh, like we mentioned, Mibayis HaMichutz Titzapeno. It should be plated from gold from within and without. And the way we said that it's done is that there's a middle box made out of wood, the inner box is gold, the outer box is gold, so it looks like, from inside and outside, that it's made out of gold. So Rava says, what that comes to teach you is, Kol Talmud Chacham, Shein Teche Kibari, any Talmudic scholar who is inside is not the same as his outside. In a Talmud Chacham, he's not called a Talmudic scholar because like the Aron is the symbolism for that. And we see that the inside and the outside were both gold. We didn't just plate the outside. Actually, the inside was also plated with gold. that references this idea that the Talmud Chacham has to be the same inside as he is on the outside. Now, furthermore on this, Abaya, and Be'itim, as some say, was Rabbi Bar Ula that said, not just that, actually Nikru Nisab, he's called abominable if he's only like that on the outside, but he's not really like that on the inside. Something like it says, a pasuk in Eiv, it says, Af ki Nisab v'nelach, that he's also abominable and he's tainted, who, Ish Shaisa, a man who drinks, referencing he's drinking Torah, Kamayim, like water, because Torah is always compared to water, and however, and still he has Avlo, he has iniquity. So it's saying that he's abominable if he's drinking Torah, like he's washing himself in the waters of Torah, he's drinking this and he's sustaining himself in the waters of Torah, but he's really a person of Avlo that has that he doesn't have the same inside as he's showing on the outside. Similarly, Amar Reb Shmuel ben Nachman Amar Bionison says, "Ma'idich said, what does this mean? The pasuk in Mishlei that says, Lomazem mechir." What is this money doing in the hand of the fool to purchase wisdom? But he doesn't have, his heart is not in it. He's not really interested. What does that mean? It means, again, a euphemism. It doesn't really mean the enemies. It's reference to the Talmudic scholars themselves. But woe to these Talmudic Chachamim, they toil in Torah, so they're trying to purchase wisdom. But their heart's not there. They don't have any fear of heaven. And that's what the pasuk means to say, that's not appropriate. Similarly, as Machrus Rabbi Yani would announce, he says, Chaval al deleste darta. Woe to a person that doesn't have a courtyard, doesn't have a chatzar, yet v'tara l'darta yavet, but he's making a gate for his courtyard. And that means because Torah is just the gateway to get to the main thing, which is Yerushalayim, which is the fear of heaven. And therefore, you have to first have a plot of land to then make a fence around it. So a person should first have to have Yerushalayim and then have Torah, which is the way to create a gate getting into there. And therefore he says, woe to people that they're learning Torah and they don't have Yerushalayim. Amalahu Rav al-Rabbanan. Rav told to Rabbanan, says, b'matusim inaychen, I beg of you, leitirtin tarti ganim, don't inherit two ganims, two purgatories. Now what does that mean? He was telling them, you know, you're toiling and you're learning Torah so much in this world, but if you're not going to fulfill it, if you're not going to get the main purpose of Yerushalayim, so you can inherit Gehenna when you die. And when you're living, you're also not enjoying your world because you don't even have Yerushalayim, you're not fulfilling, you're not living the words of Torah. So what's the point of Torah? You're having Gehenna in this world, and you can have Gehenna in the next world. On the same theme, Amar Yishuv ben Levi says, Ma'idich Siv, what does it mean in the Pasuk in Devarim? V'zeis ha-Torah asher sam Moshe, that this is the Torah that Moshe ben placed. What does it mean, placed? So the Gemara learns on the word sam, many times sin and samach are interchangeable, has the same sound, that what it means to say is that the Torah is like sam. Zacha, if the person merits, nasa le samchaim, becomes from a potion of life. Loi zacha, if he doesn't merit, nasa le sam misa, becomes a potion of death. And that's sam moisha, that the Torah can go either way. Behind the Amar Rava, this is what Rava said, the uman la, if someone works with Torah the proper way, then samanachaya, then it's the elixir, it's the potion of life. The layuman law, if he doesn't do it appropriately, then samadamaisa, then it's the potion of death. Similarly, in the similar vein, the Gemara says, Amr Shum Banachmeni, Ribyanis and Rami. Ribyanisin posed the following contradiction. On the one hand, Ksiv, there's a pasuk in Tehillim that says, Pikudi Hashem Yisharim, the commandments of Hashem are upright. Misam Chilev, they rejoice the heart. Yet there's another pasuk in Tehillim that says, Imras Hashem Tzrufa, the word of Hashem is smelt. It's a way of like burning the metal. Now, which one is it? Is it something that's joyful, or is it something that's harsh? So that the Gemara says, like we said before, Zacha, if a person merits and is to do it properly, then Misam Chasai, then the Torah rejoices him. Loi Zacha, if not, Tzarfasai, then it smelts him, like Rashi says, with Yisurim, with Gehenim. And that's the two different approaches that will happen if one learned Torah appropriately or not. Rish Lakish, he says, Megufi de Kronafka, this idea of this difference, if one does it appropriately or not, and there's going to be a difference in how the Torah relates to him, you could learn this out from the Pasuk itself. In other words, regarding Imras Hashem Terufa, there's two different ways that one is smelting the metal. That Zacha, if he merits, then Tzarfasi L'chaim. It's smelting him for life. When you could be destroying a vessel by smelting, or you could be purifying it and making it good. So either it could be smelt for life, or Le'zacha, if it doesn't merit Tzarfasi L'misa, then he's getting this purgatory, this Gehenim, for death. Now the Gemara continues the pasuk that we introduced before of Pekud Yashem Yisharim, so the Gemara quotes other psukim there in that parak of Tehillim. It says over there, Yiras Hashem Tahira, the fear of Hashem is pure. A medis law, it sustains forever. So what does that mean? Aram Chanina, he says, as and especially since the context of that of those Pesukim is talking about Torah, so where does Yiras Hashem come in over here? So Rav Chanina says, Zeh Lomid Torah B'Tahara. That's a reference to someone that learns Torah with purity. And that's going to be our Medes Lod. And that the Gemara says, Mahi, who is someone that learns Torah with purity? That's Noisi Isha, if he marries a woman, now he's saved from thoughts of immorality. V'achkech Lomid Torah, and then he learns Torah. That's our Medes Lod. Another pasuk over there says, Edus Hashem Namoni. The testimony of Hashem is faithful. So what does that mean, it's faithful? So Amar B'chir Bar Abba, he says, Nemonahi, the Torah is faithful, Leheyed Bolemdeo, to say testimony regarding those who learn it, to say who's fulfilling it and who's not. And that's Eidus, the testimony of Hashem, is Nemona, that's faithful to go ahead and say who's fulfilling the Torah that's being learned and who's not. Now the Gemara resumes talking about the different vessels and the different objects that were in the Mishkan. So, again, in defining terms, so it says over there two different terms regarding how they were made, regarding the pareches. It says, Maisa Roikim, it was the acts of an embroiderer. And it says, Maisa Cheshiv, it was the work of a designer. So what is that? Was it Roikim or was it Cheshiv? And what do they mean, these terms? So Amar Blazer Blazer says, he says, Shroikmin b'mokim shecheshvin. They are both regarding the same, let's say, curtain. However, it means that it would be embroidered in the place where it was marked. And that is, first, they would make the design on the garment, for example, on the pareches, through the dye. That means Maisa Cheshev, it would be marked where it should be. And then they would embroider on that place with the needlework where it was designed beforehand. That's one interpretation for these two terms of Cheshev and then was Reikim. However, Tanam Shmeidr Ibn Chemya, they say a different pshat, that Reikim means to say, that they were calling the work of embroidery, it was Maisa Machat. That was the work of needlework. Lefikach, parts of Echad, that's why there was one picture, one figure from both sides of the curtain. Chayshiv, this work of a designer, is Maisa Eirik. That was the work of a weaver, not of sewing as we spoke about before. Lefikach, shnei patsupes, that's why there were two different figures. And that is because the area, the curtain, has two sides. And therefore there were two images on the two different sides that were not similar to each other, that sometimes you had on one side a lion and the other side would have an eagle. And that, as Rashi says, as they had the belts made out of linen, that they had two different sides. That was what was called Maisa Cheshiv. However, Maisa Reikim was the same figure that was on one side, was on the other side. That's needlework. That's something that had the same figure. That was Maisa Reikim. And Maisa Cheshiv was something that was woven, and therefore you don't have the same figure on either side. It was two different figures, and those are two pshatim in Maisa Roikim, Maisa Cheshiv. It even means to say that first it was marked, you had the Maisa Roikim, then you embroidered on where it was marked. Or these are two different works that were in the Beis HaMikdash regarding when you used the fabric. Was it on one side the same figure, or was it two different figures on both different sides?